it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hola, chicos y chicas. Many thanks for joining me on the Joy of Paddle podcast, spreading and sharing the supreme delight of this wonderful and fast-growing game. I'm your host, Minter Dial, and this podcast is brought to you by Paddle 1969, the largest manufacturer of premium paddle courts. One court for life by Paddle 1969. The Joy of Paddle is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information about this network, please go check out their site, evergreenpodcasts.com. So this is the second season for The Joy of Paddle, and as with last season, we'll be running an episode once every fortnight. Please let us know what you think about the show by putting up a rating and a review. So for this number two episode of the second season, it's with Jack Binstead. Jack's a multi-talented actor and athlete. He's best known for his role as Rem Dog in the popular BBC comedy series Bad Education. Through his work, Jack has become an advocate for greater diversity and inclusivity in the entertainment industry, helping to promote a more authentic representation of people with disabilities. He's also an athlete, having represented Team GB, and having discovered paddle in the summer of 2023, he has founded and participated in the Team GB Adaptive Paddle. He practices and plays at the Rocks Lane Club in Chiswick, a 10-court club that I love to play at, founded by the Warren Brothers, that is proudly promoting inclusivity in this sport. Jack played in the inaugural Inclusive Paddle Tour in Dubai. In this conversation, we discuss his life journey, picking up paddle and what are his favorite paddle shots and pro players. An inspiring, uplifting, dare I say, joyful conversation. Vamos! Jack Hot Wheels with a Z. Binstead. It is great to have a left-hander on my show. I got to see you play. We go to the same club, and I'm really very excited to have you on my show. In your own words, Jack, who is Jack?
Well, I am Jack. I am a 27-year-old actor by trade turned sportsman, and I am currently captain of the England Adaptive Paddle Team.
Holy smokes. So actor, let's go with, start with that. How did you get into acting, and what sort of acting did you do?
So I actually started out as an athlete when I was about 9 years old. I got introduced to disability sports. It wasn't something that I'd ever thought about. It wasn't something that I knew that I could do with my disability. But I was always very keen to play sports. And so I ended up having a junior career as a wheelchair racing athlete, which it was incredible for me. It really gave me this confidence and this lease in life to go out there and achieve. And I went and set records, and I went and traveled around Europe, and I competed in a lot of high level events. And that led to me being recognized by an agent, a TV agent, who had her own agency, which was specifically for people with disabilities. And she wanted me to be on her books. She said I had a great confidence on TV when I was interviewed from the racing. So I took the opportunity. Why not? You know, it wouldn't hurt. It's a great opportunity to take on board. And that then led to me having a few modeling gigs. I had a few auditions, and I then landed a comedy TV series on BBC Three called Bad Education, which was a very controversial comedy written by Jack Whitehall. And I had a really great time on that show. I was one of the lead characters. We filmed three series and then the movie. And it went on for a few years. It was a really big job. It changed everything for me. And I'd done various acting roles in the years leading on from that. I was quite okay to leave that life behind once I became a dad, and I sort of had other responsibilities in life other than just sort of, myself and having fun. And, I had to take on a different approach to life, which I was very happy to do. And if I was able to fit acting into that world, then of course I would do so. So I'm still loosely involved in the industry. I'm still with the same agent all these years later. It's been something like 15
Beautiful.
years now. So it's been a real whirlwind, and I've loved every bit of it.
It reminds me a little bit of Jack of Sinner, the Australian Open double opens winner, newly crowned, where he was footballer, and he had another sport that he was very keen on. He ended up playing tennis, and what I'm thinking, Jack, is you've experienced multiple things, and I'm wondering to what extent that combination of things has brought you to where you are.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that in life. It's almost like the butterfly effect. You do something, and as a result, that leads on to something else, and that is a chain effect of you making, the decisions that you make in life. You end up meeting people who have similar interests, and then they have interests that are sort of along the same path. But rather than acting or radio, it's podcasting, and you go and start a podcast, or you get into modeling, or you start doing art and dance, and you sort of there's branches that come off of that. And I left sport behind when I was about 16 years old because I had it in my head that acting was like this was me for the rest of my life, this is my future. And I got into my early 20s and had done well, just sort of following that path in life. I was so happy to leave sports behind and never really gave it a second thought. But yeah, ultimately I do believe that I've sort of got to where I am now because I've met the right people who introduced me to certain things. And so I think you're right. I think it's a real combination of events.
Yeah, I was remembering Sinner was also a skier. The interesting thing there was sort of the combination of different skills and everything. So, Jack, before we get into your paddle life, I think it's really important to talk about the disability that you have, because the way I listened to it when we were talking before is like, you do sports with that, not the wheelchair, but your why you're in the wheelchair.
So I have a genetic disability called brittle bones. It does exactly what it says on the tin. My bones break easier than normal, and I'm fortunate that as an adult, I don't experience too much new injury to myself. It's not totally impossible. It's still easier than it is for you guys, but a lot of my damage was done as a kid. I've had 25 plus surgeries. I have titanium rods and pins in all my legs, and I've broken somewhere near 100 bones in my life. But I've been quite fortunate as an adult to not be too massively affected by my experiences and paddle and so forth. So I think I'm quite lucky in that respect.
Well, which is a remarkable attitude because I've done, I've had three surgeries in my life, my shoulder and knees, and the idea of getting back on skis because my knees are have done the surgery and all that is almost traumatizing. And I can't imagine what it's like to have had so many breaks, surgeries, and all that, and yet throwing yourself into sports.
I don't know. I think the first sort of the most part 10 years of my life was me trying to live an ordinary life, go to school, have friends, and do sports and go to my friends' parties and sleep over. And I did my very best to sort of live that normal life. And every couple of months there was a big leg break or an arm break or something that got in the way. And I was, drawn towards this second life that I had, which was pain and frustration and anger and me sitting in a hospital ward, just not able to move, which was a nightmare for me because I just loved moving and playing sports and being free, and I couldn't do that So I think once they sort of got to a certain point, sort of my early teens, for me, that was like, this is kind of an opportunity to go off and just do as many things as humanly possible and then choosing the ones that I want to stick with in life. So, but I mean, I don't know too much about how I curated the mentality to be able to do that. I think I set loose goals, and if I was able to achieve those, it then gave me the leeway to create new goals. And it was ticking them off one by one rather than aiming so high that you can't even see it. It was actually achieving, even if that meant like being able to get out of bed and just sitting in my wheelchair. The difference between the two actually can be incredibly drastic if you take into account what you've been through. And you it's a lot of mind over matter. There's obviously the physical element to it. You're healing broken bones, but I remember this. I broke my tibia and my fibula completely in half 5 days before the London Junior Marathon when I was 12 years old, and I spent my whole winter training for it. And I broke it 5 days beforehand, and I said to the doctors, I said, I don't know what you got to do here, but I have a race to do on Sunday. And they laughed at me. Like, there's no chance, dude. Your leg is hanging off. Like, there's no way. And I made them put my leg in a back slab, so just a sort of temporary version of a plaster cast that only went up to the knee, which they weren't advising. They wanted it to be above the knee, and I told them, no, you can't do it. And I got into my racing wheelchair on the Saturday, and I gave it a little push up and down my road to see if it was possible. And ultimately, I knew that it was entirely possible for me to start this race. My pain threshold was, of course, a lot higher than most people's, but to that degree, I was impressed. And I got on the start line, and the horn went off, and we all started racing. And my dad, actually, he trained with me when I was on the road. He had his bike, and he actually cycled the path of the London gym just in case I had to tap out. I couldn't make the whole
Sure.
thing. And at one point in time, he was just cycling along, and he was like, "Where the hell is Jack? I don't know where he's gone." And he went back because he figured I tapped out and stopped, and he hadn't realized. And next thing he knows, he's got a call come through from my mum, and she goes, "Where are you?" And he goes, "I'm looking for Jack." And she said, "He won. He came through the finish line, and
My God.
he's got his gold medal and his trophy. He's about to meet Richard Branson, who gave me the, you know." And I sped off. I had my head down, and I just was determined to do it. And I won London Junior Marathon that year.
With a broken tibia and a broken.
Fibula, yeah, the two shin bones, the two bones there, yeah.
I'm prepared to swear at this point. I mean, as in, oh my golly gosh. So that was a reduced version, but let's talk about your arrival to paddle. So you've done all this. I mean, amazing work through psychologically, I'm going to say. Physically, you also are the father of a gorgeous girl, Daisy, as I understand, and then all of a sudden, paddle tennis, which has nothing to do with marathon running.
No.
What on earth got you into paddle? How did that happen?
So, I have a very good friend of mine called Luke Dolphin, who is now the England adaptive paddle coach. He's a fantastic Roxlane paddle coach, Babolat sponsored player. And I've known him since my late teens. We don't live too far from each other, so we've met each other through friends and out socially, and kept that friendship up. We also worked in similar industries in cybersecurity, and that's the sort of areas we worked 9 to 5 life over the course of our 20s. And in one day, he turned around and he said, "I'm leaving cybersecurity." And I said, "Well, okay, why? What are you going to do?" And he said, "I'm going to coach paddle tennis." I've never heard of this in my life. I don't know what you're on about. And she said, "No, it's just great, because he had a background in tennis anyway, and so does his dad." And I'm going to go play paddle, and I'm going to coach it at Rocks Lane in Chiswick. I'm going to go. And a few times over the course of the summer last year, he said, come down, come play paddle, you're gonna love it. And a few times I heard him and I said, yeah, I mean, okay, sure, like I'll do that. And yeah, and I just didn't do it. And then about the third or fourth time he said it, I thought, you know what, I'm available right now, I'm in between jobs, I've got the time to do it, so I'm gonna go. And I turned up at Rock Lane for my first session, and I've never played racket sports in my life. I don't have a tennis background. I very much wish I'd chose tennis over the marathon racing in hindsight, because I could have had many, many years on the tennis court to my name at this point in time. But I was given a racket and I was taught the rules and the way of playing, and I smashed this ball around the court for an hour, and I really opened some eyes. They couldn't believe that I'd never played a racket sport before. And ultimately, that then for me in that moment, I was going through some stuff in my mentally last year. I was in a bit of a darker place than I am now, fortunately. And in that moment when I was playing paddle, everything went away. Every bad thought and every frustrating, contemplation in my mind. And I was in between jobs and financially struggling. But in this minute, I just forgot everything. I had the best hour. It was so good. You know, some people go to the gym and they lift weights or they do some cardio, and that gets rid of their issues and their stress. Even if it's temporarily, it helps them out. And I don't get that from gym. That doesn't work for me. And but I got it with paddles, and I ended up coming back, near enough every day for a month. I didn't go home. I just played paddle. And I learned in that time that there wasn't a wheelchair team in England. It wasn't entirely clear how many people in wheelchairs played paddle in the country, even leisurely. I knew of myself and one other person initially. But I knew that there was teams, like big teams, 20, 30 players to a team in countries like Spain, Italy, across South America. And there were associations for paddle for people who are in wheelchairs. And it's referred to as adaptive paddle as opposed to wheelchair paddle. I guess it depends on the association that you're playing under, because there's the Inclusive Paddle Tour, which I'm very proud to be part of. And then there's the Adaptive Paddle Association, which is just wheelchairs. And I like that. I like that it's not referred to necessarily as wheelchair paddle, because my teammate Rob Teague for the England wheelchair paddle team, or England adaptive paddle team, I should say, he isn't in a wheelchair unless he's playing tennis. He has a disability, but he's not a wheelchair user until he plays tennis, and then he sits in a wheelchair and does it. So I kind of like that for like the sake of inclusivity. Like it gets more people with disabilities playing, and that's ultimately what it is. It's disabilities, or it's a disability version of a sport. So.
Wow. So I want to say kudos to Luke. Hopefully you get to listen to this. That sounds like a beautifully generous spirited man that you have as a friend.
Definitely.
And then my little wonky brain goes, I think we all have disabilities at some level. I mean, some people, I think I watch them and they have, two able legs, two able arms, but they can't hit a fucking lob for their lives. I mean, the disabilities is it's a broader spectrum. It's like, rigid thinking is a disability for me,
Yeah.
and not wanting to bend your legs, even though you can, is a disability at some level because you're just not wiring yourself. So you've now explored paddle. Now you represent GB for the adaptive team. And how do you describe what paddle has brought to you today?
I'm very grateful for paddle. I feel like it's, an opportunity that came around at the right time in life. I very much lived my life looking for the next sign. That's something I adapted when I was quite young, was I'm gonna follow the signs in life. Something, comes my way, and it's somewhat convenient, or a message. I look at a bus randomly and I read the message of the bus, and does that apply to my life right now? Was that a sign? That bus couldn't it didn't need to have drove past me. I didn't have to be on this road at this point in time. I very much look for this sort of stuff in life for guidance. And the fact that Luke had brought this up to me, this was an opportunity. I needed something, actually. I knew that I needed something to take my mind off where I was and a new opportunity in my life. The fact that this came around, I just felt like I had to actually go and take this and explore this. And I very well could have continued to say no, like I had done the first couple of times, and we wouldn't be here now as a result. So, you know, I'm very grateful for what Paddle has done. I'm very excited for what's to come. There's a lot at stake here. And there's a lot of plans that we now have as a team at Rocks Lane. I'm incredibly grateful and I'm incredibly excited. And I feel like we can definitely make a big change here for other people.
I think it's worth giving a good old hat tip to Chris and Drew Warren at Rocks Lane, which is in Chiswick in the west side of London, for those of you listening from afar. And they have really shown a good commitment to this idea of adaptive. And I love the idea how you just said before, I had to adapt. At some level, that it's sort of like a life skill, is learning how to adapt. So let's, Jack, for those of us, you know, who are listening, most of us are typically able-bodied, playing paddle.
Yeah.
How is paddle different in adaptive paddle?
In terms of actual rule sets, the only change is that we get two bounces like you do in wheelchair tennis. Everything else is very much the same. But the way in which we play and the techniques behind what we do, that's where you see the largest of differences. And as well, you know, it's worth mentioning as well that because two people in wheelchairs are playing side by side, or against each other, even, it's not to say that they're playing the same technique or the exact same way, because that's where the difference in disability very much, you know, has an impact on how you play the game. Myself and Rob on the England team, we're both fortunate to have full feeling to our legs, and we both have core muscles. So that very much allows us to play a different way to somebody who would be paralyzed from the waist down, or somebody who has perhaps limited movement in their hands or their fingers. They would typically play a different way to us, even though we're both in, you know, disabled people or, you know, in wheelchairs, or that. Whereas you guys, would able-bodied people, would typically all play kind of the same way, you know. You'd have
we're completely incompetent to understand and translate. When I'm listening to you, Jack, you talk about, you know, paralyzed from the waist down, some element of core, able to move the legs. My ability to translate that and understand what that is for me anyway, I'm maybe just because I'm mentally incompetent, I just don't even gauge. It's not even a factor of a thought. So it's really interesting for you to bring the nuance of how the different types of disabilities create different abilities. And challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I have a better understanding than some around this because of my background with the wheelchair racing. Because at that level playing that sport, there was enough of us worldwide, and there's enough of us in the UK that you had clubs of people with disabilities competing. And so you had disability classification, as you would do at any Paralympics, and you know, any, again, you'd be classified as an able-bodied athlete, but we had disability classification, and that's very much put you into groups based on your disability. So you would never find someone with cerebral palsy running the same 100 meters as someone who was a dwarf, because the abilities and what you're able to do is very much different. So I was in the sort of most able whilst being disabled of the categories, because I had access to my core muscles and I had full use of my hands and arms.
And that's in running or in
that's in racing.
Marathon,
yeah, yeah.
Racing.
Yeah, that's track and field. Less so in the field, less so in road racing, they kind of all put you on one start line. But if you're racing on a track, then they would do all the T54s, as I was referred to, track 54, we would all race together. You wouldn't find somebody who was a T54 competing against somebody who was a T53, because as the numbers go down, the disability heightens. And so actually, you know, as a T54 15-year-old athlete, my 400-meter personal best was somewhere around, I think it might have been somewhere around 55 seconds. And if you look at what the world record was for a T52, for example, which is paralyzed from about chest down, I had broke their world record twice over, you know, and I wasn't a world record holder. So that's because the disability is incredibly more severe as you go along. So it has to be fair. And that's not been adapted into paddle yet, because there's not enough of us that actually warrant classification.
Well, just to lean into that thought, Jack, at 15, I think I was at 58 seconds for my 400 meters.
Okay.
So you would have whomped me. So in terms of your paddle today, you represent Britain. What or England? What does that look like? Do you get to play in international tournaments?
Yes. So when I discovered that there wasn't really any other wheelchair players playing, I did a little bit of searching and I made some great contacts within the LTA who gave me some insight towards wheelchair tennis players who perhaps were great fits for paddle. I was in contact with Albania Rudd from the Adaptive Paddle Association. She's based in France, and she gave me some insight again towards people that had emailed her regarding disability paddle and adaptive paddle. And she gave me the name and number and email of a few English wheelchair users who were interested in paddle. So I contacted them myself and said, look, I'm trying to build the first England wheelchair team. Are you interested? And it was, like you said, a massive shout out to Chris and Drew Warren, because for them, they really, they have this vision of making paddle more inclusive, and they've really embraced that. And that, you know, is incorporated through the entirety of Rocks Lane. It's not just a vision for them, it's a vision for the club as a whole. And they've been invaluable help towards achieving this. But I managed to get some wheelchair tennis players down, and I managed to source wheelchairs through the Dan Maskell Trust and through Mark Bullock at the LTA. And so I'm in the process of growing this team, and we do compete internationally. I was approached by the Inclusive Paddle Tour, which is run by a very amazing man called Alessandro. Through that, we've now competed in Dubai and in Milan. So I didn't know what paddle tennis was in July, but I started playing it in August, and I was in Dubai for a long weekend in November. So you can see how quickly we've managed to sort of turn this around and make it into something.
Deeply adaptive, Jack. Tell me, just from a techno standpoint, you're left-handed. How different is your paddle wheelchair versus your regular wheelchair? I mean, I know you drive, you have your Motobility, which I've seen, which is a great video, fun for everyone to watch.
Yeah.
But how different is the wheelchair? Because, I mean, frankly, you have to have one hand, really on the wheel moving you, because you have the other hand that has the bat, so it can't be using at the same time. And how does the wheelchair itself help you, and how do you adjust or design the proper wheelchair for you?
So there isn't such a thing at this point in time as a paddle wheelchair. We use tennis wheelchairs because you wouldn't really need too much of a modification to adjust between the two sports. A tennis wheelchair does exactly what you need it to do in paddle. Generally speaking, a tennis wheelchair would be somewhere in the region of about 7 to 8 kilos in weight. The wheels are slanted on the axis, so that you are able to turn a lot faster, which is required in tennis in order to get the ball. Ultimately, it's a very lightweight piece of kit. The wheelchairs that myself and Rob are currently using on the England team are very, very basic chairs, which the Dan Mascell Trust, incredible trust, have got a range of chairs, and they're meant for people at different levels in different racket sports. So these are very basic chairs. They're very heavy and they're not ideal. The wheelchairs actually weigh 15 kilos, so they're very basic. They're the sort of chairs that you would send out in bulk to countries in Africa for kids with disabilities over there to try sport for the first time, and it's an incredible, experience for them. It really gives them a lot of hope and opportunity. And I've been using this chair now since August, and I'm very grateful for what I've been able to achieve in that chair. But the one of the big next steps for us at the England team is to bring on sponsorship, which allows me to purchase my very own tennis chair, which will be, half the weight. And will really allow me to excel to the next level.
Yeah, especially since it's 15 kilos, you have one hand. I mean, I can just imagine what that weight is. So, how can people, if someone's listening who wants to contribute,
Yeah.
donate, what is the method for that?
So, I mean, I can be contacted on social media. I have various. So, I have my own Instagram. Yeah, my own Instagram story for paddle, which is Jack underscore paddle. You can message me on there, and I can provide you with the right emails for those who are involved with the adapted paddle team at Rocks Lane. We do have sponsorship for the team currently. A massive shout out to Play Brave Sports. They came on as a sponsor back in September, and they have that they're invaluable in where we've got to so far, because it allows us to train at Rocks Lane, and it allows us to, work on our skills and techniques and continue to compete. So ideally, we need a few more sponsors who really want to get behind what we're achieving here. This is a huge investment for a lot of people here. What we're about to achieve with paddle is unlike anything they managed to achieve in tennis. And that's a really big thing for me to say, because wheelchair tennis is huge. It's probably one of the most popular disabled sports that there is worldwide. But I know where paddle is heading. I'm sure you do too. It's such a developing sport. And as far as disability sport goes, we haven't even started yet. We're about to achieve some incredible things, and I'm going to find a few thousand people eventually who want to be playing on teams. And there will be leagues, there will be clubs all over the country. And eventually, paddle will be an Olympic and Paralympic sport, no doubt about it. And we will be the ones who started the team that are allowing people to go and compete in the Paralympics. So it's a big, big ask, and we can't do it without the help of other people who want to be part of that journey. But contacting myself or contacting Rock Lane is the best method of getting hold of us.
Hallelujah, Jack. I mean, I want to just bring in a story, because the episode before this one will have been with the founder's son of Paddle. And the interesting story is actually how the walls came around. Because in the end of the day, versus paddle tennis, sorry, where the ball can go by you, and you can't really do much about that.
Is
You
this
can't.
the story in 1969 in New Mexico?
In Mexico itself, in
Mexico,
Acapulco. But here's the thing,
yeah.
Jack, actually, Enrique Corcuera Sr., I was having this with his son, Enrique Corcuera Jr., is that the father started playing fronton basque or pelote basque, which has a wall. And then eventually he added a tennis court, and then he liked to play on the side with the wall, because even if the ball went by him, it bounced on the wall and he could play it. And ultimately, versus lawn tennis, paddle tennis, if even if I smack the ball by you, if you anticipate well, are going to be rolling onto it and you know, feeding me or eat, making me eat tennis ball or paddle ball because it's come off the back wall. Whereas if I'm in tennis, and that is also true of adaptive tennis, is if hit the ball and I whiz it by you, two bounces or not, goes by you, you can't get it back. And I must say, I did watch the adaptive tennis at Roland Garros, sorry, paddle tennis at Roland Garros. They did an exhibition match and I was there to watch it. I filmed it and I really enjoyed it. And of course, the commentary also helped because we have to learn what it's like. So yeah. Listen, let's talk about just for a couple more minutes, Jack. And I usually ask this of everybody, so don't be afraid. What sort of animal are you as a paddle tennis player?
That's a great question. What animal? You know, I'm going to have to go with the chimp. I'm going to have to go with the monkey, I think. I feel like they're incredibly cheeky and mischievous animals, and that very much sums me up in general. But I get taught by Luke and by the coaches at Roxlane how to play paddle, you know, and it's like, and I struggle a little bit with my flight, I do, and I sort of, I'm constantly thinking of other creative ways to get the ball over the other side of the net without having to slice it. and I struggle with my slice. And there's a very apt reason for it, which is that I am the same height as the bloody net. So there's about that much of a window for that ball to slice over the net to actually be a slice and not, you know, a topspin.
Or a sort of a woolly slice or one that just sort of floats.
Yeah, I do that probably more so than that sort of very attacking quick slice. Mm-hmm. And I'm learning every single week, and I will become a lot better with the slice, no doubt about it. But I feel like I'm a little bit creative, I'm a little bit cheeky, and like I've put myself down as like a baby chimp. I wouldn't even say a fully grown one, a baby one.
We're always learning, Jack. What's your favorite shot?
My favorite shot of alcohol?
I love it.
Oh, you meant shot on the
Yes, Jack, cheeky old sod that you are.
I got you, man. I got you. My favorite shot, my favorite shot to watch is most definitely that sort of finishing smash. It's just so aesthetically pleasing to watch the ball fly, and when they return it back into the court, that's doubly as incredible. But my favorite shot to pull off would probably be that really, really powerful backhand topspin straight into the corner of the court.
Nice. So I'm just imagining backhand. So you play on the right.
I'm on the right side.
I got it. Yeah. I love it. I have two left-handed children, by the way, although I'm a righty. And what's your shot you're trying to work on?
Most definitely the forehand slice. Most definitely.
Luke, he's listening to you. what about other paddle players that inspire you?
I really enjoy Alejandro, who is an incredible, I think it's Alejandro Grillo.
Grillo Acosta.
Acosta, a Roxlane coach who was top 35, 30 in the world at one point in time. Watching him play, it's just, he makes it look so effortless to just be brilliant.
Poetry.
It's like a warm bath on a cold winter's morning.
I love it.
It's just so lovely to see. And so I really enjoy him. He's taught me a lot too. He's had a few training sessions with me as far as I know, has never spent a day of his life in a wheelchair, and certainly hasn't played wheelchair sports. And his foresight, his sort of ability to look at my situation and the way that I'm having to play, and then come up with a solution that I haven't figured out as somebody who's been in a wheelchair for 25 years is pretty remarkable. To have that knowledge just, you know, stored away is incredible. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, I haven't seen a great deal of able-bodied paddle because I've seen clips all the time. I see clips. And so I don't really know too many actual able-bodied paddle players. I have loads on my Instagram. People follow me. I love watching clips. But I haven't really paid too much attention, actually, to able-bodied paddle. I'm very focused on you know, growing what I've started here. And you know, eventually along the way, we will be playing in the same tournaments as these people. And that's when I'll really see their poetry come to life and their way of playing. And I'm sure I'll learn lots. And I'm very adamant as well. I'm very sure they'll learn from us too. No doubt.
Oh, boy. I know that you were in Italy and you kind of, I don't want to call it a boy crush, but it seemed that you had a high regard for Marcos.
Yes, Marcos is an incredible player. He's somebody that amazes me. I first saw him do this when we was competing in Dubai back in November, but there was a shot that I played against him. It was kind of I played a lob. And it went over his head towards the back of the glass. And he didn't turn round. He didn't chase the ball and then turn his wheelchair around to get behind it to send it back. What he did was he just wheeled his wheelchair backwards. So his back's facing the ball. And he had the perfect timing to just flick his arm like that behind his back and produce
off the back wall.
Behind him, off the back wall, just like that, enough power to send it off the glass and back over the net. And I saw him do this three or four times. It wasn't a fluke. He did it three or four times over the course of a day. Most definitely a last resort shot because the timing to pull that off is pretty remarkable. But Marcos is such a beautiful man to watch and to engage with. And he's also somebody who's in the process of helping us obtain our own tennis wheelchairs. He has a lot of contacts himself, so he's definitely someone I'm going to stay close to over the years.
I absolutely adore that anecdote with Marcos because the other day I was on a court with three ladies talking about paddle, and they said, "How do you get that, you know, that shot off the back wall?" Yeah. And I was explaining to them, and these are three able-bodied ladies, and it's still a very complicated shot. So, well. Credit to Marcos. It's beautiful to hear. Last question for you, Jack. What is the life lesson that in this short time that you have been experiencing paddle, that paddle has brought to you?
I think it's important to really take a step back from what you're wanting to achieve in your life and listen for what else is available to you. Because I definitely wasn't looking for paddle, but it was right there. And I had to really, you know, excuse the pun, but I had to take a step back and I had to, you know, listen to other people and what they were saying and what they were presenting to me. And that then led to me being where I am now playing paddle and creating a new Paralympic sport. So I think it's important to really take that time to listen to others. I think it's something that we definitely don't do enough in life. If you think about your day-to-day life, how often do you actually listen to other people?
And you know, the ego, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think it's worth mentioning that paddle won't be for everyone. You know, there will be tennis players who just
what? Sorry, wait. Sorry, no, excuse me. I can't believe what you're saying. I'm having a moment.
It's worth mentioning. I don't want to be part of a sport that's just populated by people who don't want to be playing it. I think I love to play against people who actively enjoy what they're doing. I knew wheelchair racers who wished they weren't wheelchair racers. But they didn't have another sport to go into because that's a completely different way of doing things. And And they'd rather be playing basketball, but they were wheelchair racers. They didn't have a team to play on. It's a team sport. You couldn't just go and do it yourself because then you'd look lonely and silly, wouldn't you? And so they continue wheelchair racing, but they didn't want to be doing it at that point in time. They were just doing it out of force of habit. They were good at it, so they just continued doing it. There are people out there who will try a paddle and they'll go, you know what? I prefer tennis. I prefer being able to send that ball past somebody and then not able to return it. I like the fact that the courts are larger in tennis, you know, and they'll have their reasons for it, and that's fine. But I feel like there's a lot more people out there who have no clue what paddle is yet, and they are in for a real treat when they do discover it, because it probably will change their lives.
Jack Hot Wheels Beanstead, our very own paddle bad boy. Great to have you on the show. What's the last word for the joy of paddle?
Last word, support us at the England Adaptive Paddle Team. We're on to really big things. Rocks Lane are incredible. Shout out to Luke, Dolphin, Chris and Drew Warren. And Emma Warren as well, at Rocks Lane. They're all working so hard to achieve greatness, and they're doing so well at doing that as well. And you'll be seeing a lot more of us, no doubt about it. We've got plenty of international tournaments lined up this year. But yeah, if you want to be part of this crazy journey that we're creating here and all these opportunities for others, then please do make contact with us. And let's go play paddle.
And the best ways to get contact with you, Jack?
My Instagram is jack_paddle. So you can contact me that way. Or you can get in contact with Rocks Lane themselves if you ask for Luke Dolphin or you ask for Chris or Drew Warren. Then you can get in contact that way, and that can lead to some meetings and some chats about how you can help.
Vamos. Perfecto. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias.
So I hope you've enjoyed this Joy of Paddle episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to be the first in queue for the next episode. And if you like what you hear, please do share around with other paddle aficionados. This is a sport that deserves to be played by absolutely everyone. And if you've got a story that you'd like to share, please send me an email, or better yet, a voice note at nminterdial@gmail.com. With that, thanks for listening. And see you on the next episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast. Vamos!
Pit Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on!